Hello, good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider the news of the day. Now, 5 months after it was passed in Parliament, Singapore's new law aimed at combating the spread of deliberate online falsehoods came into effect today. So the Protection from Online Falsehoods and Manipulation Act, and that's a bit of a mouthful, so I'm just going to call it POFMA, as it's more commonly known. It was passed in Parliament on May 9th after a marathon two-day debate. So joining us in the studio to discuss this further, we have Kristen Han, Editor-in-Chief of New Narrative. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I actually want to begin with some concerns that people have raised about POFMA, whether it could potentially give the government too much power in deciding what a falsehood is, right? And then also deciding what the punishment is. So what would you say? Would you say that that is the biggest concern of POFMA? And what are the other concerns that have been raised?
Yeah, I think that that is the biggest concern, in that the amount of state overreach that is within this bill. So, for example, it allows any government minister to order, yes, any government minister to order corrections or takedowns or blocking of access to content that contains what they call false statements of fact. And a false statement of fact is something that is a statement of fact that is false or misleading, which is a very, very broad definition. And if they think it's in the public interest to take action, then they can. And public interest, again, is very broad. It covers everything from national security to preserving public confidence in government and state institutions.
Now, if you have, or a journalist or a media or, owner, and you put out something online and you've been accused of spreading falsehoods, can you appeal this process? Is there one where you can challenge the definition of your work against the assessment of that minister?
So when the minister first makes the order, you have to comply at that instant. So it's an executive order. It doesn't go through the court. It just comes, and then you have to comply. Then you can write to the minister and ask the minister to reconsider and overturn their own decision. If they reject you, then you can take it to the High Court. But you have to comply first, and failure to comply has penalties.
Okay, so this law comes into effect today, so it has not yet been used before. Yeah. But in the lead up to this, you know, so it was 5 months ago that the law was passed in Parliament, but before that there was some consultation process, there was some feedback. What were people saying at that point in time about this law?
So there was a select committee that was convened last year that collected a lot of feedback. So there was a range of responses. Some said, yes, fake news is a threat, something should be done. There were some who said Singapore's current laws are not adequate to tackle with it. And then there was civil society, so like on our side, I also testified for a select committee, and we were like, the laws are adequate. We have lots of laws, from sedition to contempt of court to defamation laws, that can be already used. And so there was this whole range of perspectives that were submitted to the select committee.
And also, if you could help us understand the media landscape in Singapore, is it one of a vibrant, democratic, media landscape with a lot of contending views? And, is social media also a very vibrant place that, in fact, issues like this might come up? And were there instances that the government pointed to say, well, here's an example of what can go wrong if we don't control speech, at least in terms of spreading out falsehoods?
So Singapore's media landscape, the mainstream media, which usually refers to traditional media, TV, radio, newspapers, is largely owned by two companies, which are ostensibly private companies, but do have government influence intruding into it. So Mediacorp, which is the broadcasting, which does most of the TV and radio, is actually owned by one of the sovereign wealth funds. And then Singapore Press Holdings does the newspapers and magazines. And there is government influence in both. So the government does have a say in key appointments. There have been accounts of them being pressured to censor stories, and there are a lot of accounts, even former journalists who come out of the mainstream media, say that there's self-censorship in the newsroom. So that's already the situation in the mainstream media landscape. Online, it's a little bit freer, but on Facebook, there's a lot of discussion. You know, most of Singaporean politics seems to take place on Facebook these days. But it's also becoming a little bit polarized, and with laws like POFMA, it becomes, there's a little bit of a chilling effect where people are like, oh, can I say this on Facebook? Can I not say this? Maybe better not to say anything at all.
Right. So that's the concern, right? So the concern is, after POFMA comes into effect, after today, essentially there's not much space left in terms of the freedom to express.
I think one of the concerns is that people don't really know how much space is left. So how will POFMA be used? How often will it be used? Who will it be used against? It's not entirely clear. POFMA also allows an exemption where ministers can exempt whoever they want from the law. Oh. And so there's this question of who are you going to exempt? If fake news is so harmful, why do you need to exempt people? Mm. If you can exempt people, why is this law the way it is? So,
okay.
Yeah.
What do you do with a situation when somebody feels that the government of the day is actually producing the false news, or the government of the day is misinforming the public or trying to manipulate them? Is there an avenue for taking government to task based on this law?
Based on this law, no, because the law is only about government ministers issuing orders. So there is no opposite channel. Like, you cannot have, unless you can convince one government minister to issue an order against another government minister, there's no way you can use POFMA.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, in terms of, I guess, you spoke about, you know, social media, and I'm wondering about alternative media. I mean, if I understand, so you are editor-in-chief of New Narrative, you also previously worked on the Online Citizen, which is also an alternative online media. You produced a documentary called An Online Citizen, right? To talk about Terry Shi, who is the editor-in-chief of The Online Citizen, and his struggles for funding and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So what is the future for, you know, alternative media like yourselves, you know, in the shadow of POFMA? Are you worried that you might not be able to continue operations?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of concern, not just for independent media, but just individuals on social media, because POFMA does cover social media. In fact, they say POFMA covers closed chat groups, so like your WhatsApp. Yes, so I think for the independent media outlets that are already struggling, it is another thing that hangs over your head that could be used against you. Mm. And if you do get three such orders within 6 months, they can just declare your website a declared online location, in which case you can't get funding for it, you can't have advertising, you can't sell subscriptions. Okay. And so there's a concern that websites might be defunded and essentially shut down that way.
Okay, so in context, this means that most of the news narratives are coming out of the government or through government filters or, you know, government-owned media organizations. That means most Singaporeans get their news directly from the government, directly or indirectly from the government, without having options for other things if this POFMA is put into effect. Now, the question is POFMA really about removing any kind of channels for criticism of the PAP?
So that is one of the suspicions, that that's what it's for, because it does seem extremely, you know, it's an extremely blunt tool, and it's also so much overreach. It's such a big weapon to have when it wasn't entirely clear how severe Singapore's problem with fake news was. So, for example, in the Select Committee, they kept bringing up examples from Myanmar, they kept bringing up examples from Germany and the US, but there were not that many examples from Singapore itself, because we haven't seen huge coordinated misinformation, disinformation campaigns in that way. We have seen some social media hoaxes, you know, One example they really like to use was someone posted a photo that made it look like a public housing block's roof had caved in, and then the police had to go down there, and then they discovered it hadn't caved in. And so they used that as one example, but that's not POFMA levels of fake news.
National security level. Yeah. Right?
What about the ordinary Singaporean, right? And this is often a problem that activists are very concerned about. Yes. You know, the extent to which government will want to occupy space and, you know, arrogate to themselves controls of defining what is problematic and so on. But does the ordinary Singaporean have those concerns? Or do they largely trust the government of the day, the PAP, to help them live in a safe and comfortable, you know, country?
Yeah, I think a lot of Singaporeans do trust. There are high levels of trust in the government, and they do trust that the government will do what's in their best interest, and that if they need to bring in a law, there must be a reason why they have to do it. And also, you know, in the run-up to POFMA, there's all this coverage in the mainstream media about fake news and how fake news is a threat, and government minister speeches and comments about how it's a threat. And so it's kind of like, oh yeah, there's this threat out there, and what a good job so everyone is
so
doing.
So it's been effective. This PR campaign
the PR campaign is effective.
You know, one of the things that's said about the PAP government is that it's often ahead of the curve in terms of, you know, global conversations. It's always trying to get there before everybody else does. For you, do you see a trajectory, coming from POFMA? Because based on a history of curtailing freedom of speech, and Singapore is, you know, said to be an illiberal democracy, do you see anything down the road that is also going to be a threat to freedom of speech in Singapore?
Yeah, so on top of POFMA, the government has talked about bringing in new legislation to deal with foreign interference, however they define it. Again, like POFMA, it comes down to a question of how do you define what is fake news, how do you define what is foreign interference. Singapore as like this big global city and finance hub, that, you know, at what point is it okay foreign interference, at what point is it not okay foreign interference? It's not entirely clear. Is the PAP going to be the arbiter of what is acceptable and not acceptable foreign interference? So in the run-up to that law, we've seen them mention, you know, platforms like The Online Citizen and New Narrative as possible nascent examples of foreign interference in Singapore. And it's kind of
Well, help us understand. I mean, how is a New Narrative, in fact, a platform that could be used? I mean, what exactly are they pointing to when they refer to New Narrative as a possible proxy for foreign interests and influence?
So they're pointing to the fact that we, as a Southeast Asian platform, have applied for and received foreign funding. So we've got foreign grants that came out from outside of Singapore. We got independent journalism grants. And also we do things like democracy classrooms. So they point at that as saying, this is how foreigners will then use New Narrative as a vehicle to interfere in Singaporean politics.
Can you explain a bit more about these democracy classrooms? What is that?
So democracy classrooms are basically discussion sessions that we hold to kind of create space for Singaporeans to come in and sit face-to-face and discuss issues of the day. So we've had democracy classrooms on fake news, we've had democracy classrooms on the death penalty, we did one on minority rights last month, and then this month we're doing one on youth activism. So it's just about creating space for Singaporeans to come and engage face-to-face and have good faith conversations.
I mean, this, the Constitution of Singapore describes the country as a democracy.
Yes.
And it seems that you would be completely in line with the Founding Fathers' wish for the country to be democratic by having these classrooms. But we had a recent example of the Yale University, NUS problem, where Alpha Insider, a well-known playwright, and his a two-week course on dissent and modes of dissent was shut down. I mean, it made headlines. I mean, is that a fair representation of Singapore as an illiberal democracy? Is Alfian Sa'at's case yet another example of the suppression of democratic dissent?
I mean, that made headlines because, again, people started talking about Yale's own reputation and, like, is Yale selling out its reputation by trying to open a liberal arts college in an authoritarian state? And I think, personally, as Singaporeans, we don't have that much stake in Yale's... Like, I personally don't care about Yale's reputation. I've never been there. I'll never afford to go there. You know, the college can have whatever reputation it wants. But the question is, it's always going to be difficult for you to run a liberal arts college in a country where there are restrictions on civil liberties. And how are you going to square that circle? And I think I have sympathy for Yale and US because they're never going to be able to square that circle. And perhaps they should just kind of be really honest about that struggle.
It also raises a question of other spaces that people might occupy in order to push the agenda, open up some sort of criticality. The arts was a place for that. Today, is there a space for the arts to explore alternative views of the country or alternative desires about how Singapore should move on in the future?
So there's discussion about that because a lot of artists in Singapore rely on state funding to get their work done. So there's been discussion about when the National Arts Council gives a grant, does it come with political strings? And, you know, the National Arts Council has said things like, you know, when we give the grants, like, you know, it has to be in line with, you know, policies and things like that. But we've seen, you know, artists, so Sunny Liu, a graphic novelist who is one of the co-founders of New Narrative, had his publishing grant withdrawn because they said that his graphic novel, which went on to become very, very successful,
this is the work by Sunny Liu.
Yes, undermined the authority of the government. And Jeremy Tiang, who wrote a novel called State of Emergency that looked at detention without trial and how it affects a family, also had his grant cut off when they saw his first manuscript. And so there are ongoing questions about how much is the arts able to push at the moment?
Okay, well, you know, with that documentary that you put out along with, you know, your colleagues, an online citizen, I'm just wondering, using that, right, as a way to kind of get people to talk about the issues, you know, especially what Terry had faced going through this, what kind of conversations was it that you were hoping to generate? Because the documentary was meant for a more international audience, mm-hmm. wasn't it? So what were you hoping people understood about this, and what kind of conversations were you hoping that people would have?
We were hoping to be able to find that middle ground so that an international audience can understand the story, but at the same time, if Singaporeans watched it, they can actually kind of see that human element, because very often, you know, the online citizen, you know, the government says they make trouble, or the government says they might be foreign interference, foreign influenced. We just wanted to see people to see Terry,
right,
and what he does to run this site, and then this is the person that he is. This is the person that's driving all this, largely almost by himself all the time, and we just wanted people to ask questions about that. Like, why does Harry have to do what he does? Why is it so difficult? Why is it like this in a developed city like Singapore?
So putting a human face on what is a perceived online threat. All right, okay. Thank you so much, Kristen, for being on the show. I'm Melissa Idris. With me, Sharad Kote. We're signing off for this evening. We will be back with you same time tomorrow for another edition of Consider This, only on Astro Awani. Good evening.